Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
You're listening to our number two in the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
I don't.
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Driver's known as the big dog. I'm just saying, let him loose. Let him rip. Let the big dog
eat. Yeah, baby. Time to let the big dog eat is right. Won't be long either. We get that British Open going. We'll be watching morning golf. I mean, that's always a good thing as well. Welcome back. Tuesday tradition. Tradition Tuesday, if you will, here in the doghouse. We'll reset that in a little bit. But one of our traditions on Tuesdays, especially throughout the football season, is we talk to Kevin Rogers from VegasInsider.com, and he joins us now. K-Raj, welcome back. How are you, man?
Tom, good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. You know, last week we talked about the SEC in a way – you know, things were coming down after SEC media days and how the media had picked the teams and so on and so forth. You're an ACC country, you're a Florida State guy as well. And I don't know, what's it been, 10, 12, 13 years that Miami and Florida State have been in this ACC? And they put them in opposite divisions because everybody just assumed that they'd be playing every year in the ACC championship game. It's never happened. Does it happen this year? Is this the year finally that the Hurricanes and the Noles play in the conference championship game?
Well, I mean, you'd think it would happen sooner or later, like you said, and for some reason, well, I mean, for Florida State's case, they can't really take the blame on this one because they've gone to the ACC championship plenty of times, and right. Miami has not gone even one time, which is amazing. I mean, even Boston College has gone. Wake Forest has gone, but you look at the Hurricanes, and they haven't gone, and, you know, Mark Richt is entering his second season. He's got a new quarterback this year with Brad Kaya gone, and a couple of key pieces offensively are gone, so you kind of wonder if they could put it together this year. It's just hard to say that they're a lock to go to the ACC championship just because they haven't proven that they can do it, that they can win on their side. And I mean, if they went this year, would I be surprised? No, but I think that there's no way you can really say that this is their year just because they've been in the ACC since 2003, and so far they've nothing to show for it as far as ACC championship appearances.
Well, yeah, I think the thing there is Mark Richt's playing a big part in that. The defense is playing better. And the entire Coastal Division is, you know, replacing quarterbacks. I mean, there isn't a returning quarterback in that Coastal Division. So when you look at that, I think, you know, people think that this may be the year. I know the ACC media voted Miami overwhelmingly to get there. And as you look at their schedule, you know, they open up with a couple of soft touches and then at Florida State, and regardless of what happens in Tallahassee, they'll be a heavy underdog, I would think, or a decent underdog at Florida State. That might be a preview. But then Toledo, Duke, then they're off. Georgia Tech back at home, Syracuse at North Carolina. You look at it, we don't know what Notre Dame is going to look like, you know, when they'll get Notre Dame in November. You could see the distinct possibility there. The big question is who's going to play quarterback, you know, and if they've got a guy to come in that's going to play, whether it's this Evan Sharifs or whether it's this Malik Rozier, you know, which one of these guys is going to emerge? Because Brad Kaya was a pretty fair quarterback.
He was, and I don't know what the situation was with him and Mark Richt on why Kaya went to the NFL, and, you know, he was a second-day pick in the NFL, right, by the Lions, so it's not like saying this guy went to the NFL and it was like Deshaun Watson or one of these guys that was picked in the first round that's going to be that can start for his team, where he's not going to start in Detroit. But when you look at the Hurricanes' schedule, like you mentioned, even though Clemson's going to take a step back this year, they avoid Clemson on the schedule, pass Florida State in the third week of the season. You know, really, the schedule's not that tough in the ACC. They don't get Louisville on their schedule. Obviously, Notre Dame is not a conference game. But when you get, you know, the home schedule of Georgia Tech and Syracuse and Virginia Tech, they should win all four of those games. They really should. And then when you look at the road games, North Carolina is a decent team. They go to Pitt at the end. Duke, we know that they've had, you know, I don't say there are issues with them, but they had that crazy game a few years ago with the laterals at the end that they probably should have lost. But for the Hurricanes, a very favorable schedule, so you would think that this would be the year where, you know, they maybe beat Florida State and Tallahassee. They'd definitely be on their way to the ACC championship. But even if they lost that game, I still think they'd be in good shape.
Yeah, and then there's Florida State, and they, you know, of course, they have that that tough start because they've got Alabama in Atlanta, where they're only about a 3.5 point, I think, in a look ahead.
It's 7.
Oh, it's 7. I keep saying it's 3.5, and I guess I'm thinking of Michigan being 3.5 point favorite against Florida. But yeah, they're about a 7 point dog there, which is still that's the tightest line, I think, for any of Alabama's opening. We don't want to play Michigan or West Virginia or Va Tech or Clemson. It always was higher lines than that in these kickoff classics. But after the ULM game, Florida State gets Miami at home, NC State at home, at Wake Forest. You look at that schedule, that Louisville game at home could be a little bit problematic, but you almost got to look all the way ahead to that same day that Notre Dame and Miami are playing, November 11th, when Florida State goes to Clemson. And you would think that by then Clemson will have figured out what their quarterback situation is, and you know that might be the game that determines whether – Florida State's a playoff team.
Well, for Florida State, they've lost the last 2 years to Clemson. Last year, they threw away that game in Tallahassee. A few years ago, they lost by 10, but Clemson was clearly the better team than Florida State. And back in 14, when Jameis Winston was suspended and the Seminoles won in overtime. So they've been very close games with Clemson, and it's going to be tough going to Death Valley in November. You mentioned Louisville, where there's a major revenge angle, losing that game 63-20 last year, where Lamar Jackson and the Cardinals just ran all over them, and they could have put up more than 70 if they wanted to in that game. So obviously Florida State's got a bit of a tougher schedule than Miami does, but when you look at, you know, you just got to avoid the pitfalls, because past Clemson, there are other three road games inside the conference, at Wake, at Duke, at Boston College. Those are, I mean, I hate saying it, but these are layups. Like, those are games that they should walk in and win. Then you get Florida at the end. So you get two SEC opponents on the schedule. It's not going to be easy to get in that top four for the college football playoff. But, the Seminoles can take care of business. And even if they lost to Alabama in week one, hopefully that would not take them out of the top four if they won the remainder of their games.
Of course, Clemson there as well in the Atlantic. You know, that's going to be the hurdle. For Miami, if you look at the Coastal Division, who is the other team? I mean, is it West Virginia? Is it Georgia Tech with their freaky triple option offense? Duke is serviceable. They're not the rollover that they were, but I don't know that they're going to contend there. Pitt has to replace quarterback. North Carolina has to replace quarterback. You know, who is in Miami's way? Who would be the one team you think they got to beat?
You know, it's hard to take away from Virginia Tech because of, you know, in the post-Frank Beamer era, Justin Fuente came over from Memphis last year. They put up 10 victories. They won the Belt Bowl over Arkansas. And, you know, with Virginia Tech, that they're a team that can score points. And like you mentioned, there is going to be a change of quarterback this season. But, you know, at the same time, the Hokies, after playing West Virginia in the opener, which is going to be a tough game, they have very winnable games out of conference. Their next three, they got Clemson at home. They avoid Florida State on the schedule this year. And, towards the end, I mean, they go to Miami, which won't be easy, but, you know, also going to Georgia Tech, going to Virginia, getting Pitt at the end, that maybe the Hokies have a shot, that they really do to compete for that Coastal Division. I don't really love Pitt that much. North Carolina, we'll see how they do now with Trubisky gone. When you look at Georgia Tech, that this is a team that made major strides last year, winning 9 games. They get Tennessee right out of the gate in their opener. And, you know, I don't have a lot of faith in Duke. Virginia is a non-factor. So, really, it may come down to Miami, Virginia Tech on that side.
Kevin Rogers with us, VegasInsider.com. All right, let's talk about the games that are in play now, the ones that you are picking each and every day. And you can get his baseball picks by going to VegasInsider.com. We are underway. And the Cubs come out flying. I mean, they sweep their first series, and now they're in Atlanta. They get the win last night. It's going to be a tricky deal for them tonight. John Lackey on a bump there, but Atlanta, you know, went in experience on the hill as well. Even though Atlanta's been a gritty team, they're just a game under 500, which nobody would have thought. But are you buying the Cubs right now? They've already shaved a couple of games off of Milwaukee's lead. Are you buying the Cubs right now to go on, you know, some sort of a big streak here, a 17 out of 21 or some crazy thing like that?
You know, they had that real clunker to close out the first half against Pittsburgh, where John Lester gave up the 10 runs in the first inning to the Pirates. And, you know, I don't know if that was good timing or not, going to the All-Star break, where the first half was really a disappointment. But then again, it's like we talked about all season, at this National League Central, where no one's really pulled away, even though the Brewers have played well, you still don't know if they can sustain this the rest of the way, where Pittsburgh's been inconsistent, even though they play well recently. The Cardinals have been up and down. The Reds are a non-factor. That the Cubs, if they could just find a way to get that winning streak going, they had a really nice three-game sweep over the weekend in Baltimore. You mentioned the win last night over the Braves, where John Lester bounced back. You got Quintana from the White Sox, which is going to help out this rotation. And now maybe the Cubs can find a way to just creep back. And Milwaukee may be feeling the pressure right now. And I've told you about the starting pitching is not great for them. They have a nice young lineup. The bullpen's good. But at the same time, you still need the starting pitching. And if the Cubs can just find a way to scratch together a couple series wins here, maybe they do pull ahead of Milwaukee and they do get back in the playoffs. And then from there, we know what can happen if you just get in.
The other races that are intriguing right now are in the AL East, the AL Central, and the AL Wildcard. Boston now with a two-game lead, not over the Yankees, but over Tampa Bay, which has now won 7 of their last 10, while Boston and New York have lost 7 of their last 10. So Tampa Bay making up ground like crazy. They've jumped into the number one wildcard spot, and now the Yankees, just by a half a game, one game in the loss column, staying ahead of Minnesota, who they play tonight in game 2 of that deal. Things heating up there. I mean, does Tampa Bay really have staying power, as Boston seems to be a little bit of a flawed team, a team that doesn't have a lot of pop, makes a few errors. You know, they got some good pitching, obviously, with Price and Sale and Porcello, but they are just not right, it seems like.
Well, even with, well, I guess the Rays in a second, but even with Porcello, I mean, the guy won the Cy Young last year, won 21 games,
sketchy,
scored 12 this year, which is
amazing.
Just the downfall of what he did, if that was just a fluke last year. I don't think he's a 4-12 pitcher, but I don't think he's a 21 pitcher either. So really, you go with the two lefties at the top, and David Price has pitched a lot better after he kind of struggled coming off the disabled list to start, and Sale's probably going to win the Cy Young when it's all said and done. But when you look at Tampa Bay and just you see them sneaking up, I mean, where did this come from? Baltimore had a nice start. They faded. Toronto came out of the gate slow, and they're hanging around, but they're still behind. And the Yankees are now fading. So really, with Tampa Bay, that they have an ace in Chris Archer. This Jacob Feria, who is another young pitcher, has looked really good for them. And they have a decent lineup. And you know what? Tampa Bay is probably going to hang. I don't think they're going to go far in the playoffs if they get in. But you know what? They're a team that's just found a way to just hang and hang and hang. And with everyone else playing the way they're playing in the American League East, I mean, the Red Sox will still win that division. But with the way the Yankees have been, Aaron Judge has struggled since the All-Star break and the Home Run Derby, that, you know, the Yankees, I think we're seeing now, are petering out a little bit. The bullpen's got a lot of issues. But for Tampa Bay, I mean, they're a team that could have some staying power in that wild card race.
What about Kansas City? I mean, they're flopping around now back to a game under 500, but already, you know, this is a team a couple of years ago was one in a World Series. Two games out in the wild card, are they a factor at all, or are they a fade?
They'll still hang around. I mean, you know, last night they got blown out by the Tigers, and you kind of expected that Jason Vargas fade soon enough, where he didn't pitch well at Seattle before the All-Star break, and then last night the Tigers knocked him around. We know Detroit's kind of a schizophrenic team that you don't know what you're going to get from them every night. But as far as the Royals go, you know, they got a nice pitching performance on Saturday from Danny Duffy. There was a pitcher's duel with he and Cole Hamels, and the Rangers won in the ninth with just the one run. But really the starting pitching has been a problem for the Royals this year. They have a good lineup, but again, inconsistent. I think Kansas City will hang around if they keep their team, if they keep it. I don't know if they're going to make any moves to the deadline. A few years ago, they pulled the trigger with Johnny Cueto, and that helped them win a World Series. I don't know if they'll do the same this time to get another starting pitcher. But I think the Royals can hang because the offense is decent. But again, I don't know where that ace is going to come from, even though Jason Vargas has 12 wins. But you wonder now if he's going to trend backwards a little bit. So I wouldn't count them out just yet because they made that nice run. But also, they got swept by the Dodgers before the All-Star break. and they lost 2 of 3 to the Rangers, lost to Detroit. That, who knows, maybe that nice winning run, maybe it just disappeared as we got into July. I'm not ready to bail on them yet, but we got to keep an eye on them.
All right, finally, Kevin Rogers with us, Vegas Insider. This is personal. This is advice for my 20-year-old son, and he's finding out how hard this is to do. He's playing this contest. I don't know if you've heard about it, this Beat the Streak contest, where you've got to pick one guy every night to have a hit. And if that, and if you can go 56 games and beat Joe DiMaggio 57 games, you either pick one guy every night or two guys, a maximum of two guys, and then you count for two games. So you either got to pick two guys for 27 straight nights or one guy for 56 straight nights to have a hit. All you got to do is get a hit. Pick a guy, any guy in baseball, to get a hit every night. And he's like, and if you do it, it's $5 million. And he's like, oh, this is easy. I'm a seam head. This is easy. I'll go through the thing and see the matchups and whatnot. And he can't get past like 5 or 6 or 8 games at the maximum. That's how hard it is. So if you were looking for matchups, what kind of things would you look for? He like took Jose Altuve for like 4 straight nights. Like, the guy's not going to have a hit every night. But have you ever heard of this thing? And what kind of matchups would you be looking for if you're looking for a guy to have a hit?
I mean, I have heard of it, and I have played it before, and it seriously goes to show you how tough it is. I mean, even for real hitters that want to get to 56, I remember years ago Luis Castillo got to 30, and Jimmy Rollins got in the 30s, and you said, wow, this is amazing, and you're still halfway there. Right. So really, it is, I'm not going to say impossible, but it's very difficult to achieve the 56. But the advice, my advice would be more to go not for hot batters, but go against cold pitchers. Find a bad pitcher that's going that night, and then look at the opposite team's lineup and try to find someone, even the best hitter in that lineup, to get a hit. That's where I would say to go, because a lot of guys can get hits off of cold pitchers, but if you're just going to go for the hottest hitter, they can have a bad night. And yes, a cold pitcher can have a good night too. But I would say you look for the worst pitcher or the coldest pitcher going that night, and then see who they're facing, which team, and then probably go from there. That would be my advice.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is he had Daniel Murphy on Sunday, and he loved the matchup, cold pitcher, and then Daniel Murphy. So he has Daniel Murphy, and he has like 2 home runs and 3 hits and whatever. You know, he had a great game. And so then he says, look, this pitcher for the Reds sucks on Monday. I'm going with Daniel Murphy again. He's hot bat, and the pitcher sucks. And the Nationals knocked the Reds pitcher out in the first inning. The kid was Feldman was just terrible. Daniel Murphy doesn't get a hit. It's a 6-1 win for the Nationals. Daniel Murphy gets stoned. That's how hard it is. I mean, you'd think that would be a no-brainer. And, you know, that's how tough it is night in and night out.
Well, also, too, the other thing, if you think about it like this, which, I mean, again, you can't do anything about, what if your batter either, you know, what if he had 3 walks? You know, or what if he reached on an error? Or, you know, like, you have these things where, well, he can get on base. He can score 3 runs and get on base 3 times, but he has no hit. And then you end up losing. So it's hard. I'll just tell you that. It's a very, very hard thing to do. So if you win the money, I would say congratulations, because that's not an easy thing.
I'll come and see. If we win the $5 million, I'll come and see you. You know, now he's asking my advice.
Just
he wasn't asking
piece,
my advice.
Not half,
I'll give you a little,
just
piece.
Little piece.
A little touch. I'll give you a little touch. A little tribute. A little tribute for Kevin Rogers. All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Great stuff. Check him out at VegasInsider.com. He's hot in baseball right now. And, of course, coming up in football, you're going to want to buy his football package, because he'll keep you on the right side of that deal all throughout the college and NFL season. Thanks, man.
All right, Tom. See you. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, Raj. All right. Lonzo Ball was the MVP of the NBA Summer League. And the Summer League is like 20 minutes long, right? But still, they played a bunch of games, and Lonzo Ball was the MVP. Let's get some thoughts on it and final thoughts on the offseason before everything goes really quiet in the NBA, and we'll do that next with Bo Estes from NBA TV and NBA.com. It's the Tom Abraham Show. Back one more after this, 7:30, 103.9 PM.
The Tom Abraham Show is back. Listen at your own risk.
Can I just say this about Shooter? Watch that. That's a really good show. I'm just going to say that. My shows in the summertime are usually on TNT and on USA. Those are my summertime shows. When everything else goes dark, you know, and then the TNT's smart. Like, they'll run a lot of their series in the summertime, and that's when, I watch all of that stuff, you know. But Shooters on USA, I think it's good, man. I mean, that's movie-quality type good. Watched it last year. I want you to watch it this year. I mean, it's good stuff. All right, joining us now, guy does a tremendous job with the NBA coming off of the Summer League, which is like about 15 minutes long, but it's, you know, you get a kind of a little peek at some of the guys, the young guys that are developing for this upcoming season. Bo Estes joins us from NBA TV, NBA.com. Bo, welcome in. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the show tip, Tom. I'll give you one more. Mr. Robot on USA Network Season 1 was just amazing. Absolutely blew my mind.
Yeah, that's I did not see that, so I'll have to go back and check that one out. But Shooter is really good, and I like the TNT stuff. You know what I mean? And the one I didn't see, what was the ship one? I need to go back and watch it. Hopefully that's on Netflix now. I want to go back and catch up on that. What was that? The ship one that was on TNT. I can't remember the name of it now.
You've got me. I have no. I'm going to get in trouble for not knowing that, but I should.
Yeah, you probably should know that. I'm just saying. All right. Now, give us the parameters for who's eligible to play in the summer league, because I saw some second-year players in there as well, right?
3 years and less. 3 years and less. Now, that doesn't mean that they will play. That just means that they're eligible to play. So you got a guy, I think there's an age parameter too, but got a guy like Kendall Marshall, who has been a part of 4 years of NBA service, but I think it's 3 years of total service. He had an ACL injury. Kendall Marshall was the old guy this year out there that, you know, he played at Carolina in 2012, but I think it's 3 years and less of service.
Yeah. All right. In this summer league, Lonzo Ball's Lakers win. Obviously, you know, it's like a freshman or a JV tournament, if you will, you know, in college basketball or in high school basketball. But it must bode well to see Lonzo Ball play that well for Laker fans to think that, you know what, maybe – this is the guy now that we are building around, and we're building around somebody that can lead this team back to relevance.
I think what you learned about Lonzo Ball was the way he plays basketball and the way he sees the game. He moves the ball as quick as any NBA point guard right now does. He catches the ball in the backcourt on an inbounds, and he's zipped it up to somebody in shooting position. So his pace, and I think that will carry over to the regular season, is just lightning quick. And he's not a guy who needs to dribble the ball all day to do anything, which I think helps these young Lakers out. Look, summer league success doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a lot of success in NBA regular season. It's two different animals completely. But if I were the Lakers, I would be very encouraged by Lonzo Ball, and maybe even more encouraged by their other first-round pick, Kyle Kuzma, who was just ridiculous. He scored 30 points and 10 rebounds last night in the championship game with Lonzo Ball out. So I think they've got two young pieces that they should be very excited about.
Yeah, and you know, once he started wearing, you know, legitimate shoes, I mean, he couldn't shoot in the big baller brand shoes. He couldn't shoot too much. You know what? The old man was relatively quiet. I thought that there would be a lot more, you know, blowheartedness out of him with the kid winning the MVP and all of that. And he was relatively quiet, other than his comment about, you know, he's just showing these different shoe companies what they could have. You know what? I think there's something to that too, though. If you're, you know, if you're Nike, Reebok, you know, whoever, and you know, Under Armour, and he wears your gear and has a big night, it is a little bit of a sneak peek as to, you know, maybe we do need to give this kid a decent contract.
For better or for worse, Lonzo Ball has a ton of attention on him, and a large part of that is his father. I'm not sure I love every bit of the way he's gone about this, but, you know, it's the old, you either love him or you love to hate him. LaVar Ball has got people talking about his son, and it helps that his son's a really good basketball player. I mean, you wouldn't be talking about him if his son couldn't play basketball and play basketball in an attractive way. Mm-hmm. But... You know, Lonzo's going to make some money with his shoe deal, however it turns out, whether it's his own brand or whether it's somebody else's brand or sort of a partnership deal. he's going to make some money, and his dad has helped to do that. So it may leave fans with a bad taste in their mouth about how, you know, what all he says, but it's working from a financial standpoint at least.
What was a pleasant surprise for you that came out of this couple of weeks? Something that happened that you said, well, that's a pleasant surprise.
First of all, for the Lakers, the guy I mentioned, Kyle Kuzma, has to be a terrific, terrific sort of second guy that you can focus on this season. The Lakers seem like a good story. And the other story that seems like a good story, you know, we've talked on your show before about these sort of classic teams coming back. Well, the Boston Celtics were the number one team in the regular season in the East last year, but Jason Tatum looked like an absolute monster. I mean, as good as anybody in the summer league, I thought, from, you know, what he can do and how it would translate to an NBA regular season, I thought he was just absolutely outstanding. There were some other players who sort of rose above what you thought they may do. I thought, you know, a guy that I expected to do well, De'Aaron Fox, looked good in places. But the challenge with all this, Tom, is that if you look to summer league and say, boy, he was really good in summer league, he'll be great in the NBA regular season, it just doesn't always translate that way. So you have to just look in your mind and say, this would work in an NBA regular season. And I think Jason Tatum is the guy that you know, before Markelle Fultz got, or after Markelle Fultz got injured, I thought he was the guy that could do the most.
Yeah, Markelle Fultz. I mean, you know, that just is getting, and I don't know what you can update us on what the extent of that injury is, you know, but man, I'll tell you what. I mean, I joked that the dude would get injured walking to the mic to be introduced to the Philadelphia media because of the history that there's been in Philadelphia. I mean, they're the Cleveland Browns of the NBA right now, the way guys get hurt. But, Fultz, how big a deal was that injury? And, you know, in the big picture, will it matter?
It won't matter for the regular season. The Philadelphia 76ers have said he'll be fine. He needs a few weeks to recover. If you saw Brandon Ingram for the Lakers get injured early in the Vegas Summer League, and it was a cramp, and he just reached down and grabbed his leg. Magic Johnson was standing on the sideline, and he just stood up and you know, palm across the throat. He's done. Cut him. Get him out. He is over. So people don't take chances in the Summer League. I don't know that Markelle Fultz could have played much more in the Summer League with the extent of his injury, but he'll be fine for the regular season. And just to touch on what he was able to do, this is a special player. This is a really, really special player. I like to look at the Summer League and say, if you redrafted, would any spots change? I can tell you number one wouldn't change. Markelle Fultz, what he was able to show was absolutely tremendous.
Bo Estes with us, NBA TV, NBA.com. Jalen Rose says that LeBron James is as good as gone now. He's playing his last year for the Cavs next year. Has Dan Gilbert screwed the pooch so bad in Cleveland with the way he handled the front office, the lack of moves, and so on, that he's actually kind of almost given LeBron an out, whereas this time, you know, the fans would be more apt to burn down, you know, Dan Gilbert's house than they would be burning LeBron James's jersey if it comes to pass next year?
Well, I think the biggest out for LeBron James is he brought the city of Cleveland a championship. So he's done that now, and he marks that off, and Cleveland can feel better about that whole thing. But, you know, there is some thought that LeBron does not see how you can win a championship in Cleveland with where Golden State is positioned, how the Houston Rockets have improved. I don't know that Oklahoma City's quite there yet, but when you add Paul George to Russell Westbrook, you sure are getting better. You know, the reports today indicated that, boy, Cleveland was close on a Paul George trade. And that would have made it interesting. That would have made a sort of Golden State-Cleveland matchup really, really tight. I said at the end of last season to you and I believe other people that every move in the NBA among elite teams is going to be judged on whether it closes the gap on Golden State or not. Cleveland has not closed that gap, and the gap was significant in the finals. So I don't see LeBron, you know, Dan Gilbert's got time. He can fix things. He can make things better. But if things aren't getting better, if they aren't closing the gap, I think he'll look elsewhere just to see what he could possibly do.
What do you think about what Nike's doing with the new uniforms? You know, coming in with this lighter fabric and, you know, and some of the teams going back to a retro look like the Pistons and so on and so forth.
So they're giving them more choice, as I understand it. So that's Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be entertaining for fans and players alike. Now, you know, you and I, when we hear that the teams are going to have more choices in uniforms, we immediately think, well, geez, that's more marketing dollars. And, you know, that's sort of a cynical response to that. But I think it's fun for fans, and I think it's fun for players as well, because they like sort of mix it up a bit. None more than Lonzo Ball, apparently. But mm-hmm. I think it's fun. I think it's entertaining, and I think it just it's just another element of attention on the NBA. I saw, it was 2 days ago in the middle of July, just past All-Star Weekend in baseball. The top few stories on ESPN were NBA stories. The lead picture on ESPN was an NBA story. So things are good for the NBA right now, and that's good for myself. That's good for anybody associated with the league.
Yeah, but let's be honest, okay? They also have stories about the WNBA, and nobody else does. And it's because that they're jammed with the product. I mean, ESPN has a lot of money invested in the NBA, so they're going to make sure that that's in the forefront. They were the ones that were invested as well in the summer league. They've got a tab for it. They got a tab for the CFL too, because they're carrying CFL games. You know what I mean? So
that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. They have a CFL tab, and you see stuff on the crawl. ESPN's crawl will tell you exactly what it is that they carry. You know, it's always interesting when you see that. When they had arena football, there was arena football scores on the crawl at ESPN. Now that they,
remember SportsCenter, Tom, when they lost hockey wasn't a part of the show anymore.
Exactly. And the same thing, they would have highlights from arena games. When they had arena games, they would have highlights from arena. Now you'd think that the arena league didn't even exist, which in some cases it doesn't really exist. But that's a whole other thing. And then NASCAR is the same way. It's the same way with NASCAR, with everybody who carries NASCAR. It's there. If you go to Fox, you get a NASCAR story on their front page. If you go, you also get a lot of soccer on FoxSports.com. It's just, I get it. These are all promotional vehicles, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and, for me, I get the idea that you promote the brand that you have invested in. The challenge for me is when you don't honestly tell the story of what's going on with that brand, and that's an entirely separate discussion. But if you're not honestly covering the NFL or whatever your product is, to me that's a different challenge.
Yeah, well, there's a whole nother. Yeah, FoxSports.com decided not to cover anything, I guess, anymore. Now all they do is show highlights of their shows. I mean, that's what they turned their and they fired all their writers, and they just show highlights of their own shows, which is kind of goofy. All right, man.
Yep.
Appreciate you as always. Great stuff. Enjoy the what is left of whatever the off season will be, and then it'll be on, man. The NFL teams are in camp starting tomorrow, man. Rookies are five teams have their rookies showing up tomorrow. We got preseason game in less than 2 weeks from Thursday, an NFL preseason game, and then it's on like Donkey Kong. And right after that, the NBA camps open up, hockey, and here we go again.
It won't be long. I won't have much time to breathe, man. I can promise you that.
Enjoy wherever you're going off on your travels. I know you love to travel. So wherever you are, I live vicariously through your trips to, the Himalayas or Hawaii or wherever the heck you're going. So enjoy.
You'll find me in Maui this summer, bud.
Maui. There you go, baby. All right. Appreciate you.
See you, Tom.
Hey. Maui. Suppose that doesn't suck. All right. Let's grab a break. When we come back, we've got a number of other things I want to get into, a couple of things I want to flesh out that I haven't gotten to as well. It's the Tom Abraham Show. Phone lines open as well. If you want to get into that, you can do that. Jump on the lines at 866-485-9867. It's the Tom Abraham Show. Back with more after this on 730-1039, The Ump.
No time to get on the phone? Tweet the big dog at Tom Abraham Show. Here's Tom Abraham.
Remember waiting for the school bus. Jenny Clayton was my first crush, and neither one of us had a clue.
In Oceania. Phone lines are open, 866-485-9867. Gonna react to anything we've done so far. A lot of open room in this phone, in this show as well, because coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, Mark Long will join us from the AP. We'll talk a little Gator football with him as we begin a little more in-depth look. And of course, with teams now starting to show up in NFL camps, I mean, this is kind of exciting, NFL camps opening up tomorrow with rookies reporting in Baltimore, Chicago, Dallas, Jacksonville, and New Orleans. The Cardinals, the entire team shows up on Friday, and the Cowboys show up on Saturday because they will play in a Hall of Fame game on Thursday, August 3rd, which is 2 weeks from Thursday night. And T-Mac, how long have they been playing a Hall of Fame game on a Thursday? Is this the first time it's going to be on a Thursday? Because I don't remember it being on a Thursday.
I'll have to double check. I mean, we're getting on that right now, actually. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is not the first time. I have a feeling that I've heard of this before.
Yeah.
So I'm going to double check that.
Yeah, I don't remember them being on a Thursday night. I'll say this too: more and more teams now are having their camp at home. You know, in fact, 66% of all the teams in 2017 will have their camps right at their home facilities. The Titans have done that for years and years. I think a couple of times in their history they went off and went somewhere else, but for the most part, they have been at home most of the time, staying at their own training. And it makes sense for the teams. It's such a big financial deal when a team goes, like, the Buffalo Bills still train at St. John Fisher College, my school, in Rochester. And we loved it that they came there, that they came and trained at St. John Fisher College because they built our facilities. I mean, to be honest, they built our locker room. And what a recruiting thing it was for us. Not only built our locker room, they made it possible for us to build a stadium with a turf field and everything else at Fisher when I was coaching there. And, you know, how cool would it be? What we did, T-Mac, is we would have the locker assignments, and we would leave the nameplate of the Buffalo Bill player up on the locker and then assign our kids the lockers. So it would, like, you would bring in a recruit and you'd see, here's Jim Kelly's locker, here's Thurman Thomas's locker, here's Andre Reed's locker, here's Bruce Smith's locker. We're going to give you Bruce Smith's locker. You and Bruce Smith are going to share a locker. When he's going to use it at NFL training camp, then you're going to have it the rest of the year. That means a lot to an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty cool thing. That would definitely pique my interest and really get me excited if you told me I was getting somebody's locker like that, like Jim Kelly's locker or something like that. And by the way, you were right. The Hall of Fame game is officially on a Thursday for the first time ever.
Yeah.
This is the first time ever.
This is the first time this is ever going to happen, a Hall of Fame game. It'll be on NBC 7 o'clock on Thursday, August 3rd is when that will be on. And it seems like there's fewer preseason games being televised this year than any year I can remember in the past. It just doesn't seem to be that there's as many preseason games that are going to be televised nationally. Week one, well, you're going to have the Hall of Fame game. There's no games in week one of preseason that are on nationally. Week two of preseason, you'll get Tampa Bay at Jacksonville. There's a barn burner on ESPN. And the Giants at the Browns. Well, that's eye candy. Well, no, it's not anymore because the Browns don't wear their football uniforms. They wear some clown suit. But Giants and Browns for years and years was a big deal back in the day. And then week three, there'll be five games on. Kansas City at Seattle, the Chargers at the Rams in L.A. All right, those two games will be on CBS. The Bears at the Titans, which will be the noon game on Fox on Sunday, followed by the 3:30 game, which is Cincinnati at the Redskins. And then on Sunday night on NBC, it'll be the 49ers at the Vikings. And that's it. That's it. It seems to be, I remember there being more, you know, games on, but, you know, not that we need to see them. And if you're betting on them, you've got a problem. I mean, at that point in time, you need to seek help if you're betting on NFL preseason games. I like to watch the bad teams and the teams with new coaches because they have a tendency to, you know, play these games a little like they're a little bit more meaningful the way they play them. T-Mac, note, did you know that you can get an entire face transplant?
What?
I'm not talking about like just getting plastic surgery. Check this out. this story, you know, I mean, I'm 56. So there's not a lot of things that come across my desk. And I see the story and I say, hey, there's a story. That's something I never heard of. I pretty much have heard of just about everything. I mean, in some way, shape, or form, I feel like I've heard of just about everything. I never heard of this. The Cleveland Clinic says that a 21-year-old woman who was disfigured by a gunshot as a teenager has received a face transplant.
What?
Yeah. I don't know if you could do this electively. If you could, I mean, clearly, like Danny T and... I mean, I can think of a few guys that we got that, you know, might want to go get a face transplant.
Like,
if
they do
that.
Before you die, do you, like, donate your face to science? Or
what was that movie, Face Off?
Face Off. I was going to mention that. Yeah, Travolta and Cage. It's funny that when they, you know, when Nicolas Cage receives John Travolta's face, he all of a sudden inherits his bigger body as well. But, you know, it's whatever.
The hospital says that the 31-hour surgery, 31 hours. It's like it started yesterday and it ends today.
Well, if you're getting a prettier face, you want to make sure you do it right. You don't screw it up.
That's true. That's true. You don't want to mess that up. The hospital said the 31-hour surgery was its third face transplant, but its first, quote, total face transplant. It included scalp, eyelids, nose, face muscles, nerves, teeth, and jaw. The medical center isn't sharing names and other details about the patient and donor to protect their privacy. A hospital statement said Tuesday quoted the recipient as saying recovery has been sometimes difficult. Well, you had a face transplant. But that she's thankful for the medical staff and the incredible gift from the donor and the donor's family. Well, wait a minute. So the donor, who donates their face?
Right.
Clearly, that has to be. That's not like donating a kidney or something. I mean, that's something you've got to wait until you're dead, probably, right? You can't just donate your face.
That's a commitment, man. I wouldn't think that you would just, you know, hey, this person got shot in the face, and they need a new face. Yeah, I'll take the shot in the face. They can have mine.
And then 21 years old, so and a chick. So, I mean, how the person's face that you're getting. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, like, you know, like if you're a 21-year-old woman, I mean, you don't want to get like Wolverine Dan's face. You know what I mean? I mean, you got to get another chick's face that's relatively close in age.
Yeah.
Doctors say the transplant will help the woman breathe, speak, chew, and express emotions more effectively. Well, geez, I hope so.
There had to have been a lot of research that went into this and precision in the surgery, because can you imagine getting someone's face and like having muscle or nerve damage or something like that? Your lips don't work. You know what I mean? Like you get a new face and then the lips don't work or something like that. What's the protocol there? Yeah, sorry, we messed up. You know,
facial reconstruction alone wouldn't have accomplished that. So if you could have a new face, I mean, whose face would you want? So put that up on the Twitter.
That's a good question.
I want to put that up on the Twitter. Wait a minute, that's my email. No, that's not it.
Whose face would you want being someone around relatively your age? Because there's a lot of good looking celebrities your age, you know what I mean?
Well, wait a minute. Does it gotta be confined to your age?
I would assume somewhere around there. I mean, you don't want, you know, a 20-something year old guy's face. It would look out of place, you know what I mean?
Just wondering if you could have somebody's face at an age like my first reaction is I would want Stallone's face.
Watch Stallone.
I don't know. I just like Stallone's face. You know what I mean? I'd want Stallone's face. But I don't want his face now because he looks beat now at 70. You know, he's 15 years older than me. So I don't want that face now. I want Stallone in, like, Rocky 2 when he could speak clearly and all that stuff. Right. Rocky 3. What was the one Rocky where all of a sudden he could speak and he was, like, sophisticated? I don't know. Though. Stallone's kind of an ugly guy.
If I were your age, I would go for Clooney. I mean, Clooney's always a dapper-looking guy.
Oh, Clooney's a good face, yeah.
I would go with Clooney.
I wonder how old do you think Clooney is?
He's probably in his 50s. He's got to be at least in his 50s.
George Clooney. I wonder if he's my age. George Clooney is 56. He's exactly my age.
Wow. And there you go.
George Clooney is – he turned 56 in May. George Clooney is my age. Almost exactly my age. Yeah, I'd go for that face. That's a good face. But my wife would go for that face, too. She'd go for the, I should get her and ask her whose face she wants me to have, if I could have a face. Brad Pitt, George Clooney face.
See, I know who the McFiance would go for, but it would be out of place because he's a darker guy. Shamar Moore. See, I can't pull off a Shamar Moore face. I'm a white dude.
Yeah, you couldn't go with his face. He's the dude from Criminal Minds, right? Yeah, my wife liked him too. All right, let's grab a break. We'll come back. Mark Long is up next. I don't know whose face he has. Right here at 730-1039, yeah.
Sports Radio 730 and 1039, The Ump.